Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Let it be. Let it be. Let it be. Let it be. Yeah, there will be answer. Let it be. 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 Whisper words of wisdom. Let it be.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. 1970 was not just the topic of the Marcone album. It was also the year that the Beatles officially ground to a halt. Paul McCartney announced he was leaving the group, and the tight friendships at the core of the band had unraveled, and after the breakup, those relationships would become complicated and even antagonistic. In the 70s, the ex-Beatles did jam together, but they also wrote unflattering songs about each other, and they all ended up in a lot of legal hot water. The author and music journalist Peter Doggett explores the fiery aftermath of the Fab Four in his book, You Never Give Me Your Money, The Beatles After the Breakup. He joins us from Southampton, England. Welcome to Soundcheck, Peter.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So it's 40 years on. Beatlemania is arguably as strong as it ever was, you know, with all these reissues and the Beatles rock band, and there's a big Lennon revival underway. Why focus in on the bad years at this point?
It was quite interesting. I was lucky enough just to catch the last couple of numbers that Mark was playing, which were great, by the way. I really enjoyed that. And interesting to hear it about his sort of take on the Beatles breaking up in 1970, because I was a couple of years older than him. I was 13. I wasn't aware of it at all. It was only later that year that I actually got into music. I became a Beatles fan, and then a friend said, oh, you do realize they broke up 6 months ago. And I was really cross because I'd missed out on this thing. And so really, the last 40 years is not just the story of what happened to this great icon of the 60s and what happens to those people after the group break up. It was also, in lots of ways, the story of my involvement with the Beatles as a fan, because I first became aware of them in the aftermath of the breakup. And I've watched this sort of story and sometimes very unhappy story unfold over the last 40 years.
The funny part is, 1970, as they were breaking up, you know, they were still releasing singles. They were charting very high here in the United States, and I'm sure there in the UK as well.
Yeah, indeed.
The story that has come down to us is it was a combination of factors. There were certainly personal things, but that there was a very sort of complicated business story. And you title your book, You Never Give Me Your Money. How much is money at the root of what happened to the Beatles?
Unfortunately, it's at the root of most things in life, isn't it, these days particularly. And in the case of the Beatles, what had happened was that their original manager, Brian Epstein, had died in 1967 and had left the group in a state of chaos, because they had taken almost no interest in the business side of things. And suddenly, they were in a position where they didn't trust anybody else to look after their affairs. They had no idea what contracts and so on they'd signed. There were all these obligations, all these bits of paper everywhere, and they more or less panicked because the money was running out. And so by the start of 69, it was very apparent that they needed to get a big boss figure in. And that was also the moment when Paul McCartney had started going out with Linda Eastman, whose dad, very helpfully, was a music business lawyer and, as it turned out, an expert in this kind of thing. So Paul said, well, we can use Linda's dad. And not surprisingly, human nature being what it is, all the other three guys said, there's no way we're having your girlfriend's father managing the group. And it just happened that John Lennon had been introduced to Alan Klein, who was managing the Rolling Stones at that point. Mm-hmm. And the two personalities hit it off. And so John persuaded George and Ringo to go with Klein. Paul said, I don't like him. I want to go with my father-in-law, as he very shortly became. And from that point on, I think the Beatles' unity was more or less shattered.
So that was the first big crack in the edifice of the Beatles?
Not quite the first, because in personal terms, in 1968, we'd seen Yoko Ono arrive on the scene. Now, she often gets the blame as being the person who broke up the Beatles, but I don't hold her personally responsible in any way. What she did, however, was change John Lennon's life and his attitude both to his work and to his music and also to the Beatles. Because as soon as he became involved in her, she fired his imagination in so many different ways that he found it more exciting to be with her and to work with her than to be with the Beatles.
Well, let me ask you, just backing up a moment to the title of your book, what do you think the Beatles, I mean, were they being sort of tongue-in-cheek, self-referential with their song, You Never Give Me Your Money?
That song was written by Paul McCartney in 1969, during the start of all the legal nightmare, really, that unfolded over the next 10, 20 years. And he wrote the song just at the point when the other three had signed with Alan Klein, and he had refused to, and there were court cases coming up and so on, and all he was being given was what he calls in the song funny paper, in other words, legal papers. And so, yes, it was a very... sardonic look at what was happening around him in the group.
This is from the 1969 album Abbey Road by the Beatles.
You never give me your money. You only give me your funny paper. You break down. I never give you my number. I only give you my situation. And in the middle of investigation, I break down.
Beatles, You Never Give Me Your Money. The title of Peter Doggett's book is You Never Give Me Your Money, The Beatles After the Breakup. Peter, you mentioned you don't lay real blame at the feet of Yoko Ono, although she did change John Lennon. What about Linda Eastman, later to become Linda McCartney? And all right, let's just stick with her for a moment. Linda Eastman.
I don't think that any of the blame can be attached to her either, because she came quite innocently onto the scene. She was a photographer who had quite a successful career in New York, working for magazines and so on. And she met Paul McCartney, and I suppose rather naively thought, oh, the two of them were going to fall in love, they were going to get married. And suddenly she found herself in the middle of this huge antagonism, which involved not just her husband, but also her father and her brother, who worked with her father as well. And unfortunately, by the time the Abbey Road session started, what would often happen would be that the Beatles would spend the morning in a legal meeting, during which it was not uncommon for John Lennon to shout and swear at Linda Eastman's father and brother in front of her and in front of Paul, and then happily expect to go off to the studio and work with all the rest of the band in the afternoon as if nothing had happened. Mm-hmm. It was a very strange time.
Now, so Yoko Ono, Linda McCartney, Linda Eastman, what about Alan Klein? Because you mentioned he was, you know, managing the Rolling Stones and he stayed with them a long time, but when he broke up with them, that was not an amicable split. Go ahead.
I'm certainly not. No, I mean the Stones are still very negative about Alan Klein to this day, and with good reason, because they thought that they held the copyrights to their songs, and it ended up that he owned them instead. But once again, I think he has perhaps been unfairly treated in history, because he was very good at finding money which record companies and music publishing companies hadn't paid to artists. That was his great skill, and maybe he was the most talented person in the world at doing that. And he succeeded in getting the Beatles an absolutely remarkable record deal by the standards of 1969. But what he wasn't, I don't think, was a people person. He wasn't good at the internal dynamics of groups and so on. And so he achieved great financial success for the Beatles, both as a group and in solo terms. But in doing so, he managed to sort of stir up enough antagonism that the group broke up.
And they ended up in court, and the Beatles ended up having to pay this guy $5 million. Now, granted, we think in 2010, $5 million is not a huge settlement, but that was 1977. It was a pretty big settlement for Alan Klein.
It was a huge amount of money. And what you have to remember is that Paul McCartney, who never signed the contract with Alan Klein, had to pay a quarter of that $5 million, so he was very cross.
So if you can't lay blame, really, at the feet of Yoko or Alan Klein or Linda, was this simply a case of two songwriters, McCartney and Lennon, whose relationship was on the rocks and was kind of doomed to fragment apart anyway?
Not just those two either. I think it's, you have to remember the Beatles was a four-way partnership. Now, obviously, in creative terms, through the 60s, it was all about John and Paul. But by the end of the 60s, George was emerging as a creative force in his own right. And he felt quite rightly, I think, that the rest of the group didn't take him seriously as a songwriter or a musician. And although in creative terms Ringo was probably the least important member of the group, he had an equal vote. And he was also, by 68, 69, starting to feel rather bored about being in the group. So it was like a great love story that gradually, although in theory the four of them still wanted to be married at the end of the 60s, there was just too much tension in the room.
And that kind of, one of the interesting things is the way that comes out in some of the songs. In the album Ram, Paul and Linda McCartney, in May of 1971, recorded this song called Too Many People. That is Paul and Linda McCartney. Paul sounding kind of exhausted with the whole process in the lyrics to the song Too Many People. And then just a few months later, John Lennon responds with this song. John Lennon at his most sarcastic and needling in the song, How Do You Sleep? So, John and Paul, George and Ringo, going through a lot in the 1970s, in the aftermath of the breakup in 1970, as Peter Doggett describes in his book, You Never Give Me Your Money, The Beatles After the Breakup. It did give us, though, instead of one band sort of beaten and bloodied by the end, it gave us four solo careers, which raises the question, which I want to pose to you, Peter, but also to our Soundcheck listeners, what do you think of the Beatles' solo projects of the 1970s? Which of them actually went on to produce your favorite music of out of the four? You know, who do you think had the most successful career, produced the most substantial or the most enduring pop music? You can call us at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or leave a comment at wnyc.org/soundcheck. And in a moment, we'll take some calls and comments, and we'll continue our conversation with author Peter Doggett as well.
Now I'm asking all of you to help us save some lives.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
In 1970, I was too young to be broken up by the Beatles' breakup. As far as I knew, they were still everywhere. Their songs were on the radio, and anyway, I had discovered the Rolling Stones in '69. and I was more interested in what they'd do next.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
Lives on the farm, got plenty of charm, beep, beep. He's got no cows, but he's got a whole lot of sheep. A brand new wife and a family. And when he comes to town, I wonder if he'll play with me.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now in our conversation with Peter Doggett, who chronicles the life and music of the Beatles after the band broke up in his book, You Never Give Me Your Money. And we've talked a bit about the band's business troubles, the whole thing with Alan Klein and Yoko and Linda and all the rest. But we want to hear now what you think of the Beatles' solo projects that followed the breakup. Which member produced your favorite songs? Our number's 212-433-WNYC, although, not surprisingly, it looks like all the lines are full, but you can leave a comment at WNYC.org/soundcheck. And let's go right to the phones. Joining us first is Neville from Long Island. Neville, do I have this right? Were you actually on the scene at Apple Records back in the day?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
And what was that? I mean, well, tell us your experience.
Well, I think I've been on the phone to you before because I worked for Hendrix and The Who.
Right, right.
I came off the road middle of 68 with Hendrix and I was burnt out. And all the ex-roadies from Liverpool basically got jobs at Apple. And I was one of those. So I went to Apple mid-68, and I was there till December 69. And we had to sign third-party agreements that anything that was discussed, you know, within the offices was not to be discussed outside.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite obvious. I mean,
how long was that confidentiality agreement in effect for?
I have no idea.
So you're taking you're taking a little chance here, Neville.
Well, I'm not telling you anything. No, I mean, I'm apart from anything else, I'm supposed to be writing a book anyway about my whole, you know, time on the road. But it's funny because I was in contact with Yoko a couple of months, a couple of months ago. And I remember John and Yoko coming in the office, and it was a little riotous, shall we say.
Mm.
They were supposed to have meetings every month, and each department head was supposed to produce you know, what they had found during that month and play it to the Beatles. And really, only Paul's there the most. I think maybe one meeting, all four of them turned up, you know, in a year. So it was quite strained.
So it was a very fractious, even back in 68, 69, it was...
Yeah, I mean, I think it started breaking up actually in 67, especially after Brian Epstein died.
Yeah.
Then,
well,
you know...
Neville, I don't want you to give away the store if you're going to be putting this all in a book, but let me just ask you, you know, post-breakup, did any of them amount to anything as far as you were concerned? I mean, who was your favorite solo Beatle?
Oh, that's a tough one. I ought to say John Lennon, but it's probably McCartney.
Okay.
It's just a matter of how it all goes, because I believe that the Beatles would never have actually, you know, kept together had it not been for Paul in the early days in 60, 61.
Right. Well, let's see what some of our other listeners have to say. Mark in Brooklyn. Mark, do you have a favorite Beatle post-breakup?
Okay, I'm not going to talk about my favorites. I'm going to talk about, like, the qualities that made them bad. All in all, really, I thought most of the output was very good. But, you know, there was Lennon being so self-indulgent. Oh, look at me, look at me. There have been a lot of parodies on this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, my mother didn't love me. Harrison going, oh, I'm the quiet Beatle. They never gave me a chance. McCartney just being too poppy. And Ringo just being kind of... not really a songwriter, not really a good singer either at times.
What do you think? I mean, we were just a moment ago hearing Ringo in that song, early 1970, you know, when he comes to town, I wonder if he'll play with me. You know, it's sort of like, you know, the three cool kids have gone off, and like the nerdy drummer is still kind of hanging around in the schoolyard wondering if they'll come back and play with him.
Here's another point, though. Lennon and McCartney were, as far as being each other's editors, were really great. You know, Lennon could say to McCartney, don't put out that pop. But McCartney could just fine-tune Lennon as well.
Right.
But they so didn't have each other.
Yeah, the yin and the yang. That's it's a good point, Mark. Andrew in Queens joining us. Andrew, you have a favorite post-breakup Beatles or Beatles album?
Yes, I have a very strong opinion on this issue. I feel that there are two post-breakup albums which are as good as regular Beatles albums. And that's All Things Must Pass by Harrison,
and
Plastic Ono Band by Lennon. And as far as All Things Must Pass, that's one of the few albums where Phil Spector really actually made a significant enhancement there.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of good people besides Harrison who helped. You had, I think there was a song by Bob Dylan. There's a lot of good session men. Harrison himself played many instruments and did many backing vocals. The songs themselves are classics. I mean, yeah, My Sweet Lord is maybe ripped off from He's So Fine, but so what? It's still a great song. I still love both songs.
Mm-hmm.
I think there may be 10, 12 songs on that which are classic songs, as good as Beatles. And as far as Plastic Ono Band, yeah, okay, fine. So it was self-indulgent. But you know something? It was original as hell.
And it's funny how many people, Andrew, who thought that it was simply self-indulgent back in the day have sort of come around to it. I mean, as Mark Cohn was telling us earlier in the program. Those are really two great examples, All Things Must Pass, George Harrison, Plastic Ono Band from John Lennon. Let's actually go into the control room to our producer, Joel Meyer, because he's got a bunch of comments from the soundcheck page. Joel?
John, lots of our listeners weighing in on which Beatle made the best post-Beatles music. Frank from the East Village writes, I always liked John Lennon because he was the most provocative. However, I really started to appreciate McCartney once the Beatles broke up. I love his bass lines, and Silly Love Songs is a prime example. Cherie from Manhattan writes, George Harrison's music held my interest after the Beatles. He was so underrated by his more famous bandmates. I loved all his later music, including the Traveling Wilburys. What an amazing person and a great musician.
All right. Peter, I want to give you a chance to answer the question, too. I mean, you've written this whole book on the Beatles after the breakup. I mean, you know, for you, who was the most successful solo?
Well, as a fan, I was buying records by all four. So, I mean, the early 70s, when all four were competing in the charts, was fantastic for me because there was just so much stuff coming out. I was a huge John Lennon fan, and the Plastic Ono Band album completely changed my life when I heard that, which I guess was 71 by the time I heard it. And so he was always my emotional favorite, if you like. Having said that, I loved an awful lot of Paul's work, not all of it, but I've always really enjoyed his Ram album, and then some of his recent stuff as well, Flaming Pie, Chaos and Creation. But of the four, looking back now at the age of 53, in terms of consistency through the whole solo career, I think I would go for George Harrison. Often very understated, very subtle, but I think the quality of his songwriting never really dropped.
George Harrison will get a lot of support, I'm seeing on the phones and on the comments as well. Peter Doggett is author of You Never Give Me Your Money, The Beatles After the Breakup. Peter, thank you very much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Okay, thank you. It's been fun.
And that'll do it for our show this time. On the next Soundcheck, we welcome the cast of the Broadway musical Fela and the indie rock duo Dean and Britta to our Green Space, our ground floor performance venue. The event is sold out, but you can watch a live webcast tomorrow at 2. Go to wnyc.org/thegreenspace. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Brian Wise with Daoud Tyler Amin. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. We had help today from Avery Truffleman and Chase Kulpan. I'm John Schaefer. Be with us again at this time tomorrow for another Soundcheck.